Day four of April session. We have officially taken refuge. And we are taking refuge in the metamorphizer that is session. I remember a common instruction for Dharma talks when I first entered residency, meaning the teachers would give this instruction to the residents, was to listen to Dharma talks as if they were personal instruction to you. And it might be that the style in which Dharma talks were given then was more fitting to that instruction than the way that they're given now, which includes more personalized instructions and techniques and pushing people this way and pushing people that way, such that there likely are components that are helpful for this person and maybe not this person, and vice versa. So particularly when I'm giving a talk, if anything is confusing to you, assume it's my fault and not yours. The great metamorphosis of Sesshin. Metamorphosis, great change, metamorphosis. I want to start with an instruction from Mahamudra, another really cool word. Mahamudra, great gesture. This meditation instruction comes from Talopa, the head of the Kagyu lineage. It's called Talopa's Six Nails. Don't think about the past. Don't think about the future. Don't think about the present. Don't try and figure anything out. Don't try and make anything happen. Simply rest. So Mahamudra is a Tibetan Buddhist school that maybe is similar to Zen in its philosophy and instruction, though I have been told that a Mahamudran adept may find that offensive. But when we hear instruction like that, if we have a stable foundation already, the instruction itself can start to remove tendrils of obstructions that we might have to that stability. And if we don't, each of the nails, don't think about the past, don't think about the future, kind of lands and becomes something to chew on and is not very helpful. So a better way to receive an instruction like that is to begin by being grounded in your particular object of meditation. And then without changing your practice in any way, a attention grounded in the Tanden, or any clear meditation object, from there, receiving the instructions. Don't think about the past. Don't think about the future. Don't think about the present. Don't try and figure something out. Don't try and make anything happen. And rest. And in this way, and through these steps, we inform our relationship to the meditation object. These nails, the six nails, are qualifying the way in which we attend to the meditation. I want to talk today about something I don't know that I've really heard a talk on before, though I've had many a tea table conversation about it. And I want to talk about the nuance of being in an authentic, lineage-based spiritual tradition that really emphasizes letting go of everything, especially self-view, as all mystical traditions do, in a culture that has been heavily influenced by a follow your bliss model. And we can find that these two instructions, I certainly can, lead to a kind of internal confusion. And I don't know that they have to. Sometimes I can find myself stuck between the forget the self of Dogen, which we chant every day at lunch, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. Now, I don't know if this is true, but when I was in Japan, I was told that these first two selves are translated from two different kanjis. And actually, one is a lowercase self and one is a capitalized self. To study the Buddha way is to study the self, according to Shoto Harada Roshi, refers to the big self. To study the Buddha way is to study the big self, as opposed to the psychological self. And then the second, to study the self is to forget the self. So, just passing the word. Sometimes I can find myself stuck between the forget the self of Dogen and the self-actualization of the hero's journey. The lives of the ancestors, the masters from our traditions and others look like personal success stories and are worthy of embodying, of striving towards in a personal way. And yet their words continually speak of putting aside self-gain or at times any gain whatsoever. And when we hear these teachings, and we happen to be a person with very strong ambition, as everyone in this room is, it can be a little confusing. 2 days ago, I read the quote from Tongan Roshi, "So long as you are considering your own personal well-being first and foremost, how small, how lonely, how weak and ineffectual you are." Now, it might be that that particular sentence is a blend between authentic Dharma and collectivism. I don't know. So long as you are considering your own personal well-being first and foremost, how small, lonely, weak, and ineffectual you are. And now contrast that with this quote from Howard Thurman, who, among many things, was one of Martin Luther King Jr.'s mentors. And I use this quote because Hogan Roshi used to always include this quote in the Aspiring Heart workshop, the Heart's Aspiration workshop. The quote is, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is people who have come alive." And these quotes have different flavors. Rupert Spira, a modern non-duality teacher, studied with Francis Lucille in the Advaita Vedanta tradition. And he says the first talk that he went to by Francis, he heard the instruction that the spiritual path was a complete and continuous universal yes to everything. And that if he had understood that instruction from the first meeting, he would not have needed to hear another word. A universal yes to everything. And yet, as a ZCO teacher, we're required to take a curriculum on the formation of healthy boundaries. For years at ordained meetings, here at Great Vow, we would recite the Tanha Sutta, which maybe we recited in October session here most recently, emphasizing very overtly that any thought born from the root, "I am," independent of what follows that "I am," is made of and gives rise to suffering. And hearing that, respecting that, we all know that we have each had liberative insights into our own nature, which took the form of "I am this" or "I am that." It is, of course, the case that feeling separate from the world leaves a feeling of incompleteness, especially at the level of the heart, feeling separate from the object of our yearning. But it is also the case that the path towards liberation, marked by progress and distinction, brings us into ever deeper harmony within ourselves and within the world, in the midst of separation. Although ultimately along this path we can rest nowhere, there is no stopping place. It's also the case that we do, from time to time, arrive at newfound personal realities and need to manifest them for a time before we continue. And to support someone in this process is in support of their liberation, and it is also supportive of their liberation to help them move beyond that when the time is right. For example, some people at a very young age awaken to some sense of gender dysphoria. And to deny this insight, either internally or externally, can literally be lethal. So this is a serious reality to accept and integrate in our practice and teaching. Maybe no teaching in itself is true. Maybe no teaching in itself is even a finger pointing at a moon. Maybe they're all effectively fingers prying apart this tangled knot. Ken Wilber, the great spiritual intellectual, says that nothing is true, but some things are truer than others. So how do we abandon self-concern all the while manifesting something? If true nature were something separate, something that the masters had that we don't, something that we might have later if we find the right button to push, then we would have to fundamentally change to be somehow different. It would be the case that some of us were just straight up karmically shorthanded in the great matter, as opposed to those who got lucky. But if the true heart were something we had always been aware of, are continually aware of, and are, despite our occasional occupation with other things, then nothing needs to change. Maybe we are not even looking in the wrong place and never have. Still, it serves us to relax a little, not to worry so much, stop trying to manipulate the world. It serves us to cultivate love and connection, to be generous, to serve others, to represent ourselves, and to pray. Daitetsu was one of the senior ordained here in my first couple years at Great Vow, and he used to say that the difference between delusion and awakening is, and this is a demonstration, I can't see the floor anywhere. There's no floor. There is no, oh, there it is. I was sitting on it. And what I like about this metaphor is, after we realize we're sitting on it, that we could not exist without it, that our existence is proof that we're being supported by it, when we find ourselves stuck, staring at the ceiling, and it's raining, at least we know our butt's in the right place. One Joseph Campbell quote that I think ties some of these things together. We must let go of the life that we had planned so as to accept the one that's waiting for us. And this is an instruction for life path, but it's also just basic meditation instruction. We must let go of the life that we're planning in order to accept, receive our life. And we could change the verb tense to reflect any one of Talopa's six nails. Hakuin Zenji says that practice is like walking to the ocean. If we turn around and come back every time we fatigue, grow hungry, miss home, worry about the dark, we never arrive at the ocean. It's also true that if we climb a very tall tree or we take a hike out to Maegar Dock, we might see a massive river that's flowing that direction, which gives us a hint. And if we were to continue down in that direction and climb a hill in Brownsmead, we might just catch a horizon of blue. And then if we were to continue just as we get out of the trees as we enter Astoria, we might even smell the ocean. And each one of these stages would fill us with greater confidence in our direction and the worthwhileness of its pursuit. And every single person has liberating tastes of truth that inspire, encourage, and direct them. Everyone. The step whereupon we first glimpse the ocean was the same step as the step that preceded it, and was the same step as the first step of the journey, both in significance and in distance gained. The step that is taken is never lost, from Tongan Roshi. An absolute step forward we take is never lost. An absolute step forward. The continuous practice fascicle that we're reading during evening service says, not to run around is continuous practice. I hope that this teaching is not a direct criticism to those of us who have been doing laps after the lunch break. We are increasing in number, I have noticed. The step taken is never lost. The absolute step taken forward is an absolute step taken forward. What is an absolute step? As he describes it in different language, one moment wholeheartedly lived. Joseph Campbell again, I don't think people are looking for the meaning of life as much as they are looking for the experience of living. Going back to the ocean metaphor, of course there are absolute moments in all of our lives wherein we completely change our relationship to something. Just like Fuho shared yesterday, in relationship to the inner critic being so painfully caught by something and then somehow, as he described, seeing the same thing he had always seen but also differently, in such a way that it brought him to laughter. And we can call this seeing the ocean. Because it's an absolute step forward. It is an insight that in a way we can't go back upon. If any of us wants to work with our inner critic, has some means to create some distance from it from time to time, and from that distance from it, prepares to watch it return if and when the trigger occurs, we'll learn something. And that learning is a step towards water. Real insights, although they can be clouded over, they can't be unseen. Sometimes forward steps are made methodically, linearly, with intentionality, and sometimes they're abrupt and completely out of the blue. I was speaking with a woman a couple months ago that told me, as a young child, she climbed up on a hill, looked down at the forest, and then lightning bolts came from all of the trees to her fingertips, and from her fingertips back to the trees, and all of a sudden she knew that everything on earth was connected to her. That was her experience. And she still struggles with very intense depression. Shifts in the way we experience things, insights, glimpses into more stable realities, are absolute steps forward. For even if they cloud over, some things cannot be unseen. Beth Upton is a teacher of the jhanas, of the states of absorption, who studied with Pa Ok in Burma for a number of years. She says it's like you're on Earth and you see everything is flat. One day you go up into space and you realize that the Earth is finite and round, and then you return to the Earth and continue to experience things as flat. But you cannot change the fact that you now know that it is round, contained, and finite. You've seen something that can't be unseen, even if your experience returns to the way it was in a way. All that said, I don't think that's a very good way of talking about Tongan Roshi's "the step that you take is never lost." More useful and also more accurate, I feel, to talk about it in terms of wholehearted practice, in terms of living fully, in terms of not being dissuaded by doubt or fear, about moving forward completely in any direction, because every action we take leads to what happens next. We are never outside of shaping our own future and that of the world's. What I'm describing is not about any particular posture. It is not about sitting meditation. It is about true zazen. It is about living fully. As Hogen Roshi would say, the purpose of life is to live fully, which is very similar to the quote from Joseph Campbell that I just shared. I'm not sure if people are looking for meaning so much as they're looking for the experience of being alive. Now, living wholeheartedly is not necessarily about having lots of energy or being excited. We can list anything that's considered virtuous and put it in the category of wholehearted living. Or just recognize that what it's about is approaching our truer nature, which is a moving target. And that's why zazen keeps us on our toes, on the tips of our zafus. And that's why meditation methods are reliable, and in a way they work until they don't. There are many excellent meditation manuals. There even are shikantaza manuals. And there's plenty of life manuals. But zazen, life, living, are organic, evolving, flowing beasts. And practice is to keep up with that. Beth Upton, again, who trained very traditionally, Even she says in her meditation instruction that working with mental formations is not a science, it is an art. She says, it is like if we were to learn to play the guitar. We would start by learning scales, learning chords, learning strumming, learning finger picking. That would give us a very healthy foundation. But at some point, our teacher has to be our love of music. And if we're guided by our love of music, our sense of gratitude at existing everything in a way becomes manageable. And we become willing to enter new territory as new territory presents itself, which it constantly does. Rather than trying to maintain our life or our practice looking a certain way. As it's a growing animal. All of this, this is life, this is living, awakening. Chosen used to say at the end of session that sitting session was the greatest adventure. There are so many different ways to have adventures. And they certainly can involve going somewhere else. But that certainly is not a requisite. If we're awake, alive, receptive, clear, this really is an adventure, this being alive. The one who continues is the master among masters. That was Tangen Roshi again, a different translation of the last line of the Precious Mirror Samadhi. Ours says, just to do this continuously is called the host within the host. Very different feeling, those two lines. The one who continues is the master among masters. Let's look at those six nails again, grounded in your meditation. And attention on your meditation object. Not entertaining thoughts of the past or future, and not entertaining thoughts of the present. Not considering things like how to meditate, how to breathe. Not trying to figure anything out. Not trying to get it right. Not trying to fix the attention. Not trying to make anything happen. Attention is not even something that we have to do. and rest. And continuing with the attention on the meditation object and recognizing that meditation, Zazen, is the expression of completion. And Zazen in activity is the one doing of this life world. And please continue this meditation, this Zazen. Continue to express fearlessness and love. Continue to express fearlessness and love with your sitting and with your living. And sit as if there were nothing that you needed to do. Openly receptive to your meditation object, that truth may inhabit you. Dedicate yourself to what is at the expense of what is not, with every step and every breath. And Tongan Roshi says, if it is not accomplished, it is only because it was not set out to be done. And this is about your real living. The step taken is never lost. Only move forward. They move forward. It takes courage, stability, patience, vigor, understanding. It takes all the virtues. Acceptance, compassion, connection, love, kindness, charity. Please just continue. The step you take is never lost. And the step that you take is taken by all beings. For we only awaken together. Abandoning self-concern, seek connection. Abandoning self-concern, acknowledge newfound personal truths. Abandoning self-concern, see that what is living is so much more than and never separate from the person. Don't think about the past. Don't think about the future. Don't think about the present. Don't try to figure anything out. Don't make anything happen. Rest and live.